Okay, we are in Gemara Beitza Daf Chaf Hey at the top of the page to Amar Aleph. Amar Rabba Bar Avuna. Before we jump into the Gemara, let's just refresh our memories. On Daf Yud, in the first parak, there was a Mishnah that we learned, the Machlokas Beis Shammai Beis Hillel, as to whether or not the bird requires Zimun prior to Yontif. Meaning if you have a bird that you're going to shecht on Yontif, eat it. So from the beginning of the Masechta, we've been talking about shechting chickens on Yontif, and we had a different distinction between Omedes Agadol Beitzim and Omedes Lachila. But it wasn't until Daf Yud that we grappled with the question of whether you need a specific hazmana from before Yontif. Do you specifically need to designate the bird as muchan, as prepared? Do you need to designate this bird in order to not make it, in order that it not be muktza, and in order to allow you to shecht and eat that bird on Yontif? And at the time we were kind of confused as to why it took the Gemara 10 blot to get to that question. We've been talking about eating birds from the beginning. And we distinguished, if you recall, between a domesticated animal and a wild animal. A domestic animal is all mukhan because it's omedes l'achila. You know that these birds are all ready to be eaten. At any given time you could shecht and eat it, so there's no problem muktzah with those. The Mishnah on Daf Yud pose the problem of a wild bird. Birds like doves that come in and out, you might have a coop, a shubach, where they come and rest, but they are part of the wild. You know, they are not necessarily owned by you. They come in and out. And therefore, for those birds, any given bird, it's not necessarily muzman me'ilav. It's not necessarily designated for achila, so it might be muktza. Beis Hillel there said, Omeid v'omer zeh v'zeh ani notel. You have to specifically point to every individual bird that you contemplate potentially eating on Yontif, and you have to say, that one's muchan, that one's muchan, muchan. You have to designate each one. Beis Shammai was more stringent. He said you actually have to pick up and shake each one. But at least Beis Hillel, we paskin, like said, you have to point to each one and specifically designate it. So our Gemara here on Daf Chaf Hey, don't shake it too hard, I guess, right? And our Gemara here on Daf Chei is going to get into a little more detail on that halacha. Now, we're going to learn this Gemara in accordance with the Pnei Yehoshua, because this is a very choppy Gemara, as you'll see. And Rashi and Tosas talk about what's going on here. And ultimately, one of the Nosakeim on the side, you'll see the little Aleph on the bottom right, how it goes from Rav Ronsberg. He points you to the Shita Mekubetzes in the Pnei Yehoshua. Pnei Yehoshua presents a nice orderly limud of this Gemara, so we'll go with that. So with that introduction, says the Gemara on top of Daf Chaf Hey Amanaf, Amar Rabba Bar Rav Huna Amar Rav. Rabba, the son of Rav Huna, said in the name of his Rebbe, actually Rav was Rav Huna's Rebbe, as we'll see in a moment, but he said in the name of Rav the following, HaSocher Ama Samayim Me'erev Yom Tov, one who cuts off a tributary of water that has fish. So you cut off the entrance to the fish. So now the fish from the wild can't come into that tributary. And there's now a isolated area of water where there are fish swimming around. So if you cut it off, meaning you put a board there or something to cut off the entryway from other wild fish from the outside, on Erev Yontif, Ulamachar, and the next morning, Hishkim, you wake up, Umatza Badagim, you find fish swimming there, Mutarin, you may eat those birds on Yontif. It's not a problem of muktzah. Those fish, thank you. You may eat those fish on Yontif. It's not a problem of muktzah. Good. Amar Rav Chista. So Rav Chista says, Midivrei Rabbeinu, from the words of our Rebbe, Rashi points out that Rav Huna, Rav Chista, and Rav Nachman were all Tamidim of Rav. So Rav Chista, one of Rav's Tamidim, says, from these words of Rav that were just attributed to Rav, from the words of Rav, Midivrei Rabbeinu no mode, we can learn, Chaya Shekinina Bepardes, a wild animal, a chaya, that nested, that set itself up and nested, and living in a pardes, in a private area, in your own personal orchard, Eina Tzricha Zimun. It doesn't require Zimun. Apparently, okay, fine, that's Rav Chista. Amar Rav Nachman. Rav Nachman now criticizes or critiques Rav Chista's statement. Nafal Chavrin, the Rav Ravasa. Rav Nachman was another one of the Talmidim of Rav, and Rav Nachman points out that Rav Chista's statement is not so straightforward, And he says, Rav Chista has gotten himself into a little bit of controversy. This is a complicated sugya, a complicated issue, says Rav Nachman. And what Rav Chista said is not necessarily true. And we'll see in a moment why that's true. The Gemara now interjects with another slight version of what we just said. Ikadamri, there are those who say the following. Amar Rabba Bar Avuna, that Rabba Bar Avuna himself, the one who had cited the memra of Rav, that Rabba Bar Avuna himself says, Midivrei Rabbeinu, from the words of Rav Arebi, my father's Rebbe, we'll see in a moment. No mo, you can learn the same thing. Chayeshekinna bepardes, a wild animal that set itself up, that's nested in an orchard. Eina tzrichazim, and it doesn't require that you set it aside from before Yantif. You can shecht that chaya on Yantif itself. Amar Rav Nachman said, Nafal bar chavrin beriv ravasa. The son of one of our friends, meaning Rabba, the son of Rav Huna. Rav Huna, again, was part of that triumvirate, part of those three Talmidim of Rav. So now he's saying the son of one of our friends, Rabba Bar Rav Huna, has found himself in a controversy. What he's saying is not necessarily so straightforward. It's a little controversy. It's a little controversial. And why, says Rav Nachman? Hasam lo ka'av. So one second. Let's just pause there for a moment. Again, Rav said that if you cut off that tributary and now you have fish swimming around on Yontif, you can take one of those fish and eat it. Rav Chista or Rabba Bar Rav Huna, one of those two, depending on which Gersa we're going with, says that from that statement we can derive a different halacha, that not only is this true by fish, but it's also true by a wild animal that finds itself in your private area. It doesn't require Zeman. The way the Pnei Yeshua learns this, what's happening here is Rav Chista or Rabba Bar Rav Huna are saying that clearly Rav's holding that you don't require Zimun. You don't require that something be set aside from prior to Yontif. How do they know that? Because if the person here this person here cut off this tributary, right? So you could argue that that's kind of a form of Zimun, of Hazmana, of setting aside these fish to be eaten on Yontif. But we learned Shitas Beis Hillel on Daf Yud.
The problem of capturing it, that was what we discussed
on the Daf last week. Because it's a small area, they're already kind of captured. And Rav is essentially siding here with the Rav is basically paskening here that Seid is not a problem, you're allowed to take it, not a problem. But what Rav Chista and Rav Huna are pointing out here is that it doesn't require Zimun, apparently, says Rav. How do you know that? Because if what Rav was assuming is that you've accomplished Zimun by cutting off that tributary, that's not going to comply with the requirements of Hazmana, because Beis Hillel said on Daf Yud that you need to say Zev Zaninota. You need to point to each individual animal. Here you haven't pointed each fish. All you've done is cut off this general area, and so therefore that's not enough of a hazmana. So it must be that Rav doesn't require hazmana from before Yontif for this kind of situation, animals from the wild that came into a private area. And so therefore, Rabba, Bar Rav Huna, and Rav Chista conclude that the same thing is true with a chaya that is nesting in an orchard. It doesn't require hazmana, and it's sufficient that it be in a private area. Seida is not a problem because it's in a private, isolated area, and therefore, that's what Rav Chista and Rav Bar Rav Huna are saying. Comes along Rav Nachman, and Rav Nachman says, hold on, wait a second, it's not so simple. Nafal bar chavrin bir ravasa, this is a controversial issue. Because why? The Gemara continues, Hasam lo ka'avid ma'isa, hacha ka'avid ma'isa. In this situation where the person closed off that tributary, and now there's a separate area, or there's an enclosed area where the fish are swimming around, he's done a maisa of hazmana. Now it's true that it doesn't comply with the requirements on Daf Yud of Beis Hillel, but the Pnei Yeshua says that's not a problem for Rav Nachman, and that's not a problem for Rav, because that requirement on Daf Yud, according to the Maskana of Yusfugi there, was only because we were afraid that on the next day you'd pick up one of the birds, you'd say this one's too fat or this one's too skinny, and then you'd put it back, and it would be a tiltul shelo tzorach. And that's why Beis Hillel specifically required that you designate each and every bird that you're planning to use in order to kind of sear in your mind that these are the birds that I'm going to use, and you're not going to go back and reconsider whether this one's too fat and this one's too skinny. That's not the truth. That's not the case by fish. Fish, you just pick up the fish, you eat it. People don't scrutinize how fat or how skinny the fish is. You could always just grab another fish. That's just a matter of metzias, says the Mnei Yeshua. And so Rav Nachman is saying here that in the situation with the fish, by closing off that tributary, you've done hazmana. You've been mazmin these fish. And that's why there, Rav says it's okay. But by the Chaya, who comes into the Pardes and is nesting in the Pardes, the mere fact that he's in your private area, you've not done no action of hazmana, and therefore that is a problem.
Is that assuming you didn't close the gate?
That's it, assuming you didn't close the gate. Apparently that's right. Meaning the Pardes is kind of an area that's naturally yours, it's your backyard, but you haven't done a specific active measure in order to be mazmin this chaya to be eaten on Yontif.
So if he actually closed the gate, now he's trapped inside.
I guess that's probably true. According to the Pnei Yeshua's learning of this, no, he came in before, right? He's already nesting from before.
You're just saying that
the whole point was he came in before, though.
He came in before, and if you close the gate.
Yeah, so what Morty's saying is if you close the gate, if you do an actual actual action of hazmana,
the
yeah, then I guess it would be analogous to the fish, and then you'd be able to eat it. But Rav Nachman's saying that that's not true. You can't derive the fish situation, you can't derive the halacha by the chaya from the fish, because in the fish situation you did an active act of hazmana, in the chaya situation you didn't. That's what he says. Hasam lokav in maisa, lokav in maisa. Good. Now the Gemara is going to just go back and talk about Shitas Rav Chista and Rav Bar Bar Avuna. We just said that they hold that you don't require hazmana. The Gemara says, "V'lo ba'i ziman." Could that really be true that you don't require hazmana altogether? Vatanya, don't we have a brisa that specifically says Chaya Shekinah B'Pardes Tzricha L'Zamin? That if you have an animal, a chaya, a wild animal that's nesting in the orchard, that it does require an act of ziman of hazmana. Vitzipur Dror, and similarly, a certain type of bird, Sarach Likshur B'Knafel, you have to tie up its wings as a way of designating this bird as a bird you're going to eat on Yontif. K'deshot lo tischalef bima, so that you don't mix it up with its mother, which you haven't designated for consumption. Not only that, the Brisa says, V'zu edus she'idu mipishmayev avtalyum. This is a very authoritative Brisa. This halacha we heard from Shmayev avtalyum, very early Tanaim. And so the Gemara says, Tiyuvta. This brisa proves that Rav Chista and Rav Bar Avuna, or Rav Bar Avuna, depending on your girsa, are wrong. And in fact, chaya shekinah b'pardes tzricha l'zamin. You actually need to designate this chaya in order to consume it on Yontif. So now the Gemara is going to turn to Rav Nachman's shita. Again, Rav Nachman, who we seem to be following halacha now, he was the one who said you require hazmana, you require designation of this chaya. Gemara says, "Umi ba'i ziman." Is that true that Rav Nachman really holds, or that anyone really holds, that this chaya requires hazmana? Vatanya, we have a brisa that seems to cut the other way, which seems to say that hazmana is altogether not required. Amar of Shum ben Elazar, modim beishamay ubeis hillel al sheizminam betocha gan umatzu ufnei gan shasurin. Beis Shammai and Beis Hillel agree that there are some situations, some types of birds where hazmana is clearly required, because if you did hazmana of one of the cubbies in the chicken coop and you didn't do hazmana of the next neighboring cubby in the chicken coop, and now the chickens come out and you don't know which chicken came from which cubby, they're usher because they needed hazmana. Some of these chickens, you're not sure if any given chicken that you're looking at had the hazmana that was required. So clearly, with respect to typical chickens, you need the hazmana, or typical doves, you need the hazmana. But that's only true biyone shubach, with doves in a coop, viyone aliyah, and doves in the higher parts of the coop, the loft, vitziparim shekinenu betapichen, and ubabira, and with birds that nested in these, I don't know, some kind of holders, ubabira, and in a building. Again, wild things, as we've distinguished back on Daf Yud, wild things require hazmana. If you don't have hazmana, you're in trouble. You can't use it on Yantif. Aval uvzin bagis v'tarnigolim and roosters, chickens, v'yonei hardesos and domesticated doves, meaning not wild animals, but things that are in your own coop, your own area. And then pay attention, look what it says here, v'chaya shekinen v'pardes, and an animal, a wild animal that's been nesting in your private orchard, mutarim vein srichen zeman. All these things don't require zeman. So this seems to be a question on Rav Nachman, who said definitively that that unlike Rav's halacha by the fish, when it comes to a chayish kinen of a pardes, an animal, a wild animal that has nested in the private orchard, Rav Nachman said it requires hazmana, and now we have an explicit brisa that seems to say it doesn't require hazmana. And then it goes on to says v'tzipur dror, this kind of bird, tzricha l'kasher b'chanafeha, you need to tie up its wings, kadesh lo tischalif b'ima, so that you don't mix it up with its mother. Again, it requires hazmana. V'amukusharim v'aminu'anayin b'boros v'batim v'sichin v'aros mutarim, things that are tied up or that you've shaken beforehand, designated explicitly beforehand in the trenches and in the houses and in holes and in caves, all those things are mutter, again, because they've had hazmana. And then it's the brisa continues and says there are other things you need to worry about in addition to hazmana. Ubiulanos, if you find a bird in the tree, asurin, you can't use that bird, you can't check that bird on Yantif. Why shemayal vitlosh? We have a special gazer, we're afraid you're going to climb the tree, which is a problem on Yantif. Vamukusharim, And tied up birds, again, you've tied something on it to designate it as prepared for Yantif. V'aminunan, where you've shaken it, bikoma kom asur mishum gezel, there you have to worry about, I'm sorry, mukasharim bikom makom, meaning if it was already tagged by someone else, and this bird now comes into from the wild into your area, into your coop, you can't use that because it's already been tagged and taken by someone else. So that's a problem of gezel, because and the Rishonim talk about how you can be kona something from hefker, but these are again wild birds that run around their hefker. Someone else has claimed it, has taken title to that bird, and so now therefore you can't use that bird on Yontif or on Chol for that matter because of gezel. Fine. That's a long brisa. What we're focusing on is the statement in the middle of that brisa of chayish kenen abepardes mutar mein srichen zeman. That again, the wild animal that's nested in your orchard, we just in this brisa it says it doesn't require zeman. That's a question on Rav Nachman, who said that it requires zeman. Right? He distinguished the halacha of Rav. So Rav Nachman answers lo kasha haba habeima. So Rav Nachman says that's not a problem. I say it requires zeman. The brisa which says achayish kinen b'pardes is talking about the kid, the newborn, which doesn't really go anywhere. It's not really part of the outdoors at all. It was born in your pardes, in your orchard. It stayed in your orchard. It doesn't go too far. It's kind of stuck here because it's a newborn chaya. So that doesn't require zeman because you could assume that your mind was always on it even from before Yantif. It wasn't from the outside. Ha be'ima, but when the brisa says that it requires, when I said that it requires zeman, I'm talking about the mother, which comes from the wild, and the mere fact that it's now nested in your orchard doesn't take away the requirement for hazmana. And where Inter Jackson says, ima be'zeman sagila, you think zeman's going to be enough to allow you to eat this mother, to check this mother on Yantif? That's not going to be enough. Say the Mal Yusabai, you're going to have it requires hunting, and it requires you to capture it. That's a bigger problem of Tzeid on Yantif, which you're not allowed to do. So Elam, Rav Nachman Bar Yitzchak, Rav Nachman Bar Yitzchak says, Idiv Idi Bedida. Both the Brisa and Rav Nachman are talking about a baby Chaya that was just born. Now they're distinguishing between where this orchard is located. If the orchard is located right near your house, then you're kind of watching over it, and there is an implicit hazmana that exists on anything in that orchard from before Yantif. But if the orchard is more remotely located, it's kind of outside of the city, far away from where you're living, So then it's as if it's in the wild. You don't really monitor the situation there. You don't really have an implicit hazmana going on. And therefore, that's where Rav Nachman says it requires Zimun. Fine. That's Sugya. Now we have a Mishnah. Mishnah says, Behema Mesukenes. Let's say on Yontif, you have a situation where you have a animal that's sickly, that's about to die. Now, a farmer who had, we don't really think about these things too often because we're not farmers, but a farmer who has an animal that's about to die, there's an economic incentive for him to shech the animal now, right? Think of it. If you wait a few hours, the animal might die and you lose its meat. This might not be the best animal for meat because it's kind of sick, but now's the time to shech it, and the clock is ticking. If you don't shech it now, you're going to lose your meat.
I guess it's not a trefa.
And it's not a trefa, right. Yes, this is just a weak animal.
But you won't know anyway until after you shech it.
Yeah, right. Well, there might be some simani trefa where you might know before. But this is an animal that displays no explicit, no outward signs of tarfus, and therefore you should be able to eat it. So the clock is ticking. This is an animal that's going to die soon. If you let it die, you're in trouble. You lose out the few hundred dollars or whatever meat goes for. And so you better shech it now. But the problem is it's yontif. The problem is it's yontif. And it's late in the day of yontif, let's say. So you don't have time. So the question is, are you allowed to shech this animal on yontif? Normally you could shech the animal on yontif for use on yontif. You're allowed to shech the animal to eat on yontif. The reason you're shechting this animal now is not necessarily because you want to eat its meat on yontif. It's because you want to salvage its value. So the Mishnah says, "Be'im mesukenes lo yishchod elim ken yoshos v'yom lechol mimena kazayis sli." So the Tanakhama says, don't shecht it unless there's enough time in the day to be able to eat its meat, tzli, roasted. Specifically tzli, we're giving you a kula here. We're saying you don't need enough time to salt it and soak it and kasher the meat and then cook it. Right, tzli, if you roast the meat on tzli esh, on a direct fire, you don't even need to do muicha. There's an input. The tzli gets the blood out. You could just sprinkle with a layer of salt and just put it right on the barbecue, right on the tzli, on the open spit, on the open fire, and do it. So as long as there's enough time to do that very abbreviated form of preparing the meat for consumption, that's good enough. Let's say that takes an hour. So it's an hour before yontif. You can shech this animal, salvage it. But if there's not enough time to do that, then you can't do it. The Rishonim talk about whether you actually have to do that, right? Do you have to actually cook the animal now, or is all do you need? Do you only need that there be enough time to cook it? This is kind of analogous to the halacha of ho'el v'bay urchin, right? We have a halacha that you're not allowed to prepare food on yontif for the next day, right? But we say that that's only a drabanan prohibition. Normally, that's a deraisa prohibition. We downgrade it to a drabanan prohibition by virtue of the argument that in theory, guests could come and eat the food that you're preparing now. So even though you have in mind you're preparing it for tomorrow, for let's say it's Erev Shabbos, you're preparing food for Shabbos, so you have in mind that you're preparing it for tomorrow, but since in theory guests could come and eat the meat now, it's only a drabanan prohibition, and then that drabanan prohibition is solved with an Erev Tavshilin. But again, the theory is that the Erev Tavshilin works to solve a drabanan, not a Erev Tavshilin couldn't solve a deraisa. It's only a drabanan prohibition because in theory guests could come. Here the Rishonim talk about, the Rav Ashi and the Magen Avraham talk about the fact that because there's hefsed mamon involved, because there's a potential huge loss that this farmer is going to incur, we dispense even with that iser drabanan. And therefore, even if it's only theoretical, even you don't even actually have to cook the meat. Even you can rely even on the theoretical possibility that you could cook this meat for use today, and that will allow you to shech the animal today in order to salvage the value of the meat. That's the Tanakhama. Rabbi Akiva.
Like you're saying, because guests might come up, like you're in this Europe town where you know you're the only Jew in town, then you wouldn't be able, because you can't do it for non-Jews, you can't prepare. Like
right,
that.
But what about for yourself? You could cook for yourself. Yeah, here in this situation, as long as there's a theoretical possibility that you could eat it before Shkia, so then...
It's a cooler one.
Well, Ochel Nefesh is permitted. If you're going to... It really is a Daraisa, but we're saying as long as there is enough time in the day for you to eat it, then theoretically what you're doing is for Ochel Nefesh.
Oh, I see.
As long as there's theoretically enough time in the day for you to eat it, and therefore we're going to allow you to eat it. Even though you're not actually going to eat it. Right, exactly.
As long as your intention is there is possibly eat it.
As you might possibly eat it, but you don't.
And then if you take one bite and everything else is left over, it's another story.
Yeah, that's right.
Because I was making it a rabban.
No, the Erev Tavshilin is for the preparing it for chol. This is a different dessert. This is a problem of shchita on yantif altogether. Right? This is here. Remember, your intention here is to salvage the value of the meat. Okay. It's not to eat it. But we're saying since the theoretical possibility exists for you to eat this meat before shkia, we're going to allow you to shecht it. Good. Rabbi Akiva Omer Afil Kazayas Chaim Vestvichasa. He says an even bigger kula, which is that even if you don't have time to flay it and roast it, you could just eat it. You know, even if there's only, let's say, a half an hour, so there's not enough time to flay it and then roast it. As long as there's time to roast it, that's good enough. You don't have to flay it. Then the Mishnah says another halacha shachta besada oyu viena bemot. If you shecht an animal out in the wilderness in the field, you should not carry it back on those big sticks that they hold on their shoulders to carry it back, because that looks like more of an industrial activity that you're doing, not just for today. For yantif, you could only really do low scale, domestic preparation of meat. You shouldn't be running a whole operation, so don't therefore carry it on the big spigot. And with two people, uvamota, haval mevi biyadoi varim varim. You should carry it back in a more low-key manner, and that's the way you should do it in yantif. Now the Gemara says, Amar Ami Bar Abba. We're going to pick up on Rabbi Akiva's statement here that you could eat it even without flaying it. Amar Ami Bar Abba, hefshet v'nituach ba'ola. The Torah, when it describes the concepts of flaying the skin off the meat, it talks about that in the context of the Karban Ola. It says specifically, you should flay it, you should take the skin off the meat. V'hu adin, and this Amora, Rami Bar Abba says, this is true also l'ktzavim. If you intend to eat it, just, you know, as chulin, regular meat that we eat, that we buy in the store, it's also the halacha that you should flay it before you eat it. You should also take the skin off before you eat this meat. Mikan lim de Torah derech eretz. And from here, meaning from Ola, the Torah teaches you, Derech Eretz, that you should not eat meat until after you flay it. You should take the skin off the meat before you eat it. So, Mike Mashmon, what is Rami Bar Abba teaching us? Is he teaching us, and what the Gemara means to say is he teaching us just a good manners, that it's not nice to eat meat so quickly before you flay it? You should calm down, take a moment to flay the meat, take a moment to take the skin off the meat, and then eat it like a mensch. Is he just teaching you good manners, or is he teaching you a real halacha that's related to Hilchos Treifa? So let's see. My Kamash 1, which meaning that you have to take the animal apart and take time to check for the simane treifas before you eat the meat. Ilema gafuke midrafuna. Is it, one possibility is that his halacha departs from the shita of Rav Huna. Dam Rav Huna. Rav Huna says the following: Behema bechayeha bechezkas iser omedas. An animal, when it's alive, it starts out with a chezkas iser. You have to assume that if you have a halachic shaila about the quality of a shchita, let's say for example, you started off with a chezkas iser because there's an iser of Eivor Menachah. You're not allowed to eat an animal before it's shechted. And so the animal starts with a cheskas iser. And so until that cheskas iser is resolved, any question about the status of that animal in terms of whether it's kosher or not has to be resolved with chumra. So it has a cheskas iser. Until you've resolved and confirmed that it's been properly shechted. Nishchata, once you've confirmed and resolved that it's been properly shechted, becheskas heter omedes. So then all questions about its permissibility are resolved with kula, because now it has a cheskas shchuta. It's presumed to be kosher. You shechted it. You confirmed that this is a proper shchita. And now any questions that arise are resolved. Leheter, assume that it's okay. Ad sheyodelcha banim nitrafa. Until you've clarified that there's a real simen tarfus regarding this animal. That's the rule of thumb that Rav Huna says. You, depending on what the last confirmed action was, you could assume a chazaka of either tarfus or, you know, of either iser or heter. The behemah starts off with the cheskas iser. Once you've confirmed it's been shechted, you could assume this animal's kosher. If you have proof positive that there's a simen tarfus, that there's a real problem with this animal, so then you have to assume that it's not kosher until you resolve the question later. And so Rav Huna would lead you to believe that once you've shechted an animal, even without further investigation and taking apart the animal and checking its lungs and doing this and doing that, you have a cheskas kashrus, you could assume that the animal is kosher. And so therefore, if Rami Bar Abba, in saying that you shouldn't eat the animal until it's flayed, until it's taken apart, if he meant to say on actual halacha that you need to check to make sure it's kosher, that it doesn't have any simani tarfas, if that's what he meant, he'd be cutting against the shita of Rav Huna. Rav Huna was the one who just said, you don't have to be so careful. Once it's shechted, it has a cheskas kashrus. If that's the true, v'anan tenan, masnisin k'drav Huna. We know, or that's problematic, because we have a Mishnah that holds like Rav Huna. Which Mishnah? Our Mishnah. The tenan, we said in our Mishnah, Rabbi Akiva Omer, afil kezayis chami beis tfichasa, that you can even eat, you could even shech this animal if all there is left in the day is time to eat some raw meat very quickly, even before it's been flayed. Mibes tfichas means from the butcher, straight from, not even the butcher, straight from the shechita house, before it's had time to be flayed. My love, mibes tfichas amamish. Presumably, Rabbi Akiva is talking about where you've gotten it straight from the butcher house, from the slaughterhouse, without it being flayed, without it being skinned. So the Gemara says, no, maybe that's not what Rabbi Akiva means. He doesn't go that far. He doesn't really mean to say that you could eat it right away without it being flayed. Well, mimakom shetovacha sachilasa. He's talking about a specific part of the animal, specifically the part of the animal where it is tovacha sachilasa. Rashi says, mi b'nei me'eha. The place of the part of the animal where the food is digested. And the Gemara immediately rejects that and says, "Va'atani Rabbi Chia, makom tefilas zamamish." No, Rabbi Chia clarified that Rabbi Akiva in our Mishnah means that you could eat it straight from the slaughterhouse before flaying it. And so it's hard to imagine, said the Gemara is concluding here, it's hard to imagine that Rami Bar Abba, when he said that you shouldn't eat meat before it's flayed, that he meant to go against Shitas Rav Huna and hold that as a matter of halacha, as a matter of halachas kashrus, you shouldn't eat meat until all the simanu trefas are checked. Because we have an explicit Mishnah, namely our Mishnah, in which Rabbi Akiva seems to hold that you don't have to flay the meat. You can eat it even with the skin on before the skin on. So the Gemara then says, "Ela Rami Bar Abba, rather Rami Bar Abba Orach Ara Kamashman." It's teaching us good manners. It's teaching us how to act like a mensch, how to eat meat in a nice, appropriate way. Kid Tanya, as we have a brisa. Now the Gemara is going to say, this isn't the only instance in which the Chachmei HaGemara have taught us halachos about how to act like a mensch, how to be polite, how to have good manners, because we know all over the place. Chazal teaches us how to have good manners, such as for the following: Lo yochel adam shum ubatzel merosho me'olav. When you shouldn't eat any, a person shouldn't eat garlic or onions from its top, rather from its leaves. It's just telling you which part of the onion to eat first, as a matter of manners. Vim achal harei zara vasan. And if you do eat it from its top, you don't peel off the leaves nicely, so then you're a ravasan, someone who's just a A glutton. Kayotze bo, similarly, lo yishta adam koso b'bas achas, you shouldn't drink a full cup all in one gulp. Vimshasa reza gargaran. And if you do just gulp it down in one gulp, you're also like a glutton. Tanra banan, we have a similar braisa. Hashosa koso b'bas achas, hareza gargaran. If you drink your entire cup in one gulp, you are a glutton. Shnayim, if you drink it in two gulps, derech eretz, that's a nice way to do it. Shlosha, if you take three gulps to do it. Migasei ruach, then you're already haughty because you're, you know, like this really cool guy who's sipping your drink really slowly. The way to do it is in two gulps. That's the way a normal person drinks proper his balance. Drink. Hmm? Proper balance. Good lesson in life. Good. Now, we already quoted a member from Rami Bar Abba. That's what we've been talking about. And so the Gemara, while we're on the topic, says... I'm sorry?
They have a size.
It doesn't say the size. You got to kind of judge it. I assume a shot glass you could do in one gulp. But I don't know. Is that what he's talking about? The shot glass? Maybe he's talking about... That, yeah, that's Dafka actually.
Them all down, like, in one cup.
Yeah.
Twice,
I don't know. When I have a shot glass, I do it in one gulp. That's what I was taught to do.
So
I guess after
3 to 4 ounces.
Oh, he actually has the shear, 3 to 4 ounces.
Does
it
have a shear?
Where? Who says the 3 to 4 ounces?
The Mishnah Brura.
Yeah, number 4.
Oh, all right.
Average size person drinking cup 1 ruby is 2 to 4 ounces of one gulp wine.
Uh huh. This is good. The Seder is coming up. This is a good. Okay, fine. We just quoted a member from Rami Bar Abba, so we're going to quote another member from Rami Bar Abba. Velma Rami Bar Abba. Chatsuva Mikta Ragleyan Derishie. Chatsuva, which is a certain type of grass, which grows really straight and really deep, says Rashi, and therefore it's useful for boundary lines. And it says, I think even here, it says that Yoshua, when he divided up the boundaries of the Shvatim Feretz Yisrael, he would plant this kind of grass that was very straight and very deep, and it's very good for delineating borders because it's very faithful in terms of the way it grows. So that is Mikta Ragleyan Derishie. It, what's the word? It undercuts the legs of Rishayim, bad people who seek to move borders and who are not respectful of boundary lines. So this kind of vegetation, which is very faithful in delineating borders, kind of cuts against them. It is a strong argument against them. It implicates them, it prosecutes them, so to speak. Rashi says, Mikter Agoy HaRishayim L'Yom HaDin. On the Yom HaDin, Hashem is going to say to the Yerushalayim, you were not respectful of boundary lines. You are worse than this very faithful vegetation, which exists in nature. That cries out against you. Natiya mikta ragleyan dekatsavio deboli nidos. Natiya meaning fresh plantings. There's halacha of orla that you're not allowed to eat the fruit from the first 3 years. So that concept and that practice of not eating the fruit from the first 3 years, that is an indictment of katsavia, people who, what does Rashi say? I lost it. The people we were talking about, people who eat too quickly, who eat their meat before the skin got flayed from it. So again, the halacha, the kind of the patience that we learn from waiting 3 years in order to eat arla, so that's an indictment against people who eat their meat really quickly before taking time to flay it. Udbo inidos, people who don't have the patience to wait for their wives to go to the mikvah, people who violate taras mishpacha. So again, the patience of arla teaches this lesson, and it indicts those people who are not patient enough to keep mitzvahs. Termusa, Rashi says, termusa is a kind of bean that is very, very bitter and hard to eat until you've washed it in 7 rounds. You kind of have to soak it once and spill out the water. Then you fill up the water again, soak it again, spill out the water. And this works to neutralize the very sharp taste of this kind of bean, so much so that at the end, the bean is actually it tastes good and could be used for dessert. So that kind of bean, which requires 7 rounds of washing, Mikta Ragleyan Desenein Sho Yisrael. So that undercuts and it indicts Klal Yisrael itself. This is a euphemism. Senein Sho Yisrael is the enemies of Yisrael, but we're about to show that this being undercuts and is an indictment against Jews. Shenemar. And we're going to quote a pasuk from Shoftim where they're going to talk about, where the pasuk talks about how Bnei Yisrael would worship seven types of Avodah Zarah. Yosifu Bnei Yisrael, Lazas, Rabbi Nei Hashem. Bnei Yisrael continues to do bad in the eyes of Hashem. Vayavdu, and they worshipped Esabalim, Vesashtaros, Veselei Aram, Veselei Tzidom, Veselei Moab, Veselei Bnei Amon, Veselei Plishtim, seven different Avodah Zarahs. Vayazuas Hashem, they abandoned Hashem, Velo Avduhu, and they didn't worship Hashem. The Gemara now analyzes and says, Mimashma Shinemar Vayazuas Hashem. The Pasuk already told us that they abandoned Hashem, Eini Yodea Shelo Avduhu. Isn't it implicit that they didn't worship Hashem? If they did went so far as to abandon Hashem, of course they didn't worship Hashem. Ma Talmud Lomar V'lo Avdu. So what's the pasuk coming to teach us that they didn't worship Hashem? Amar Rav Lazar says Amar Hakadosh Baruch Hu. Hakadosh Baruch Hu complained and he says Afil Keturmas Hazeh. Even this kind of bean, Sheshokun Oso Sheva Pamim, where you soak it seven times, V'ochun Oso Bekinuach Suda, and at the end after seven washings, it's so pleasant that you could eat it as dessert. Well, even that bean, the B'kal Yisrael didn't treat me even as good as that bean. Lo asuni even banai. They didn't even elevate me to the level of that bean. Meaning, even after they got through seven different worshipings of Avodah Zarah, even after that whole ordeal, they still didn't. They still rejected me. They didn't serve me. Okay, Tana Mishmei Rabbi Meir. We have a brisa in the name of Remeir. Mipnei ma nasna Torah liYisrael. Why was the Torah given to Klal Yisrael? Mipnei shein ozen, because they are very stalwart, and so therefore, Rashi says that the Torah was given to them in order to kind of calm them down. Bimateshes kocham, because they're very strong-willed people. They're very, very stalwart, and so the Torah needed the Torah to calm them down. Tana debei Rabbi Shmuel, mimino ish das lamo. So the pasuk from Zosa Bracha says, mimino ish das lamo. Amar Kadosh Baruch Hu, ruyin halolu shetinasalem das ish. That this nation, says Hakadosh Baruch Hu, it was befitting that this very strong and powerful and fiery law be given to them. Again, because they are very strong and fiery, and the Torah kind of calms them down. Ika da'amri, datayan shel elu ish. There's another interpretation of this, which is to say that their religion is like fire. Shel mole nasna Torah Yisrael, inka umo v'lashin yichol namun bifnehem. The character of this people is so strong, and they would be going up against other nations if Torah hadn't been given to them to, again, calm them down and pacify them a little. No other nation could have stood up to them. They were just so strong and so powerful. V'hainu damar Rav Shimon Lakish, gimel izin hain. There are three paradigms of strength, of stalwartness in the world. Yisrael b'umos, B'nai Yisrael is compared to the umos ha'olam, I guess prior to Matan Torah. Kalev, or I should say, Kalev b'chayos, a dog coming against animals. Dogs can get all excited. Tarnigel b'ofos, similarly a rooster with birds. V'yosh omer ma'af'ez b'behema, some people also say an ez in an animal. I'm sorry, b'behema daka. V'yosh omer ma'af'tzlaf b'ilanos, and some people say even this type of vegetation among the trees. Rashi says, I don't even know why this slaf is considered strong against trees. But however it is. Okay. Then we said, to conclude our Mishnah, we said, Shachta Besada.
So you said that was before Matan Torah? You saw the Umos?
I think so. That's just from the context. It must be before Matan Torah. And then Matan Torah kind of calmed them down a little.
So other nations could go against us.
So now other nations go against us. Okay. Shachta Besada Lo Yaviyana Bemot. The Mishnah is concluded by saying that you should bring this animal piece by piece.
Did we resolve the question? Was he teaching
We ultimately resolved it by saying he was teaching Derech Eretz. Because we had said ultimately that Rabbi Akiva in our Mishnah proves that we hold like Rav Huna. Okay. Shachta Basada Lo Yaviyana Bemot. We say you shouldn't bring it in on the big spit in a kind of very industrial and pronounced way. You should do it more quietly on Yontif. That's how you bring the meat in. Tanu Rabbanan. We have a similar halacha in this braisa. In Asuma, Yotzei b'makalo. Excuse me. A blind person on Yontif should not go out with his stick. V'lo haroa b'tarmilo. And a a shepherd who might have to tend to the flock on Yontif just to keep the status quo, he should not go out with his satchel on him as if he's kind of going to work on that day. And you shouldn't go out on the chair. They would carry important people on a chair. Echad ha'ish ve'echad ha'isha. Not a man nor a woman. Again, on Yontif. Ini, is this really true? V'ashalach Rav Yaakov Bar Idi. Didn't Rav Yaakov Bar Idi say the following? Zaken echad haya b'shchuno seinu. There was an old man in our neighborhood. V'ayotze begudki shalo. And he would go out on his chair that they would carry him out on. Ubo v'sholos Rav Yoshua ben Levi. And they asked Rav Yoshua ben Levi about this, how it could be that they would carry this old man on a chair on Yontif. V'amar, and he said, Im ravim srichim lo mutter. If he's needed by the public, he's going to darshan or he's going to do some public function, so then it's okay. V'samchu rabosenu al divrei achi shakya. And the rabbis relied on the words of Achi Shakya. D'amar, he said, Ana fikte l'Rav Huna, I took Rav Huna out on a big chair, mehini l'shili u'mishili l'hine, from this place there and back. V'amar of Nachum Bar Yitzchak similarly said, Ana fikte l'mar Shmuel, I took Shmuel out on a chair, mishamsha l'tua mitua l'shamsha, from there back. And the Gemara says, Hasam, that was because Kedamar Taima Yimhayu Rabin Srichim Lo Mutter. If they were needed by the public, they were going to Darshan, they were going to give Divrei Torah, to give Shir, and so therefore their function was a public function, and therefore it was okay to carry them out in a pronounced public way on Yontif, whereas for a normal person, we wouldn't allow that to happen.
It's funny they say that. I just daven at the Shkama Minyan at Rabbi Tendler in Muncie years ago. Moshe would daven at that Minyan when he was at the Tendler's for Shabbos. And we carried him home on a chair. We picked him up on his chair. Rabbi Tendler lived across the street. And we carried him on a chair like this, across the street back to the house.
Really?
Yeah. Uh-huh. But again, he also had the Arab that Moshe helped
by. Yeah. Him. Yeah. You know, it's funny. Yeah.
Oh, so we all picked up the chair. Four of us took the corner of the chair and we carried him across the
street. Yeah, yeah. I guess that's analogous. Interesting. Okay, Rav Nachman Ulchama Barada Shlich Tzion. So Rav Nachman said to Chama Bar Ada Shlich Tzion, you came from Yerushalayim, you came from Eretz Yisrael. Kisalkas Lassam, when you go back there, Akif Vizil Asuma Detzur, go this roundabout way and go around this big mountain or big rock, Vizil Gabi Rabbi Yaakov Bar Idi, and go visit Rabbi Yaakov Bar Idi, Uboi Mine, and ask him the following question, Kisei Mahu, Kisei Ma Sonbe. What do you say about the lach of the chair? In other words, they were to ask him this shaila about whether you're allowed to carry a prominent person on a chair on Yontif. So he went dutifully on his way to go ask this question to Rav Yaakov Bar Idi, but the problem was that by the time he got to Rav Yaakov Bar Idi, nach nafshe to Rav Yaakov Bar Idi. Rav Yaakov Bar Idi passed away by the time he got there. Ki salik, but when he left, Ashkechegu Rav Zrika. He found Rav Zikra nearby. So he's figured, okay, I'll ask Rav Zrika. He wasn't able to ask Rav Yaakov Bar Idi. He passed away, but at least I'll ask someone. I'll ask Rav Zrika. So Amrulei, Kisei Ma Ason Bey. So he said, what's the halacha with this chair? What do you hold of it? Amrulei, Hachi Amr Rav Ami. So he answered, and he said, Rav Ami said, Ubavajle Kasef. He said, it's okay to hold the person on the chair as long as you don't hold it up really high, in a way that it's kind of on the people's shoulders. Just hold the chair a little lower.
That's what this is talking about, because the original source of this in the Mishnah was talking about, because that was the normal way for business, you know, that they did it. We originally were talking about Kadema. Maybe that's the way they transported people. And that like people would need to get from one place to another, and they would call.
And to do it was like an uvda d'chol. Right, yeah, I think that's what's happening here.
Saying that, don't do it like you would normally be doing it as a malacha, then it's
right. Okay, good. So if you do it a little lower, it's not on your shoulder, it's not as pronounced, it's not of the dechol in the same sense.
The way the people that are doing it for business would normally be doing it.
So right,
it
so then it's
like
okay.
You're working on Yontif.
Yeah, good. That sounds good. Okay. So we said, what does that mean, that you don't put it on the shoulder? I'm Rav Yosef, Brei D'Rava, Balunki. So it says, he says in this specific way, Rashi explains where, again, you're putting the chair on the shoulder, on the high, on that high level. Ini v'Rav Nachman sharlo Yalta l'mefak alunke. So he says, is that true? Rav Nachman allowed his wife Yalta to be carried on that high level, on the shoulder. Gemara says, Shaini Yalta de Be'isa. Yalta is different because she was afraid. It was a crowded area, and so she was afraid if it was kind of less sturdy if she was held below the shoulders. Once the chair was held on the shoulders, that was a more sturdy way of carrying her, and that would be okay. So therefore, for Yalta, they permitted it because she was afraid otherwise. Amemar Amar Zutra Michtafi Le Bishabasa Diragla Mishum Biasusa. So it says that they would carry Amemar Amar Zutra up on that high level, on the shoulder, on Yantif, because they were afraid. Rashi has a little different gear, so he says Mishum Biasusa De Tzibura, and it says, Rashi explains that there were lots and lots of people around, and it was crowded, and therefore they were afraid that they would fall, because they would get kind of pushed around by the crowds, and that's why they were permitted to do so. The Gemara continues, V'amriwa mishum duchka de tzipura. Similarly, Rashi explains that it was a crowded area. People were worried that in that crowded area, people would get pushed around and they would fall if they weren't held up on the shoulder. Okay.
Yeah.